For 7 long years, the Midianites had been the constant enemy and foe of the Israelites. It seemed that they were undefeatable and they were invincible. They certainly were a force to be reckoned with. And it seemed that no one dared touch them or no one dared attack them. That was until a man by the name of Gideon came onto the scene. Now the calling of Gideon, which is not the subject of our study this morning, is a most remarkable study. He really is a study of contrasts. On the one hand, we have a man who led a handful of warriors against a much larger army and won a great victory. But on the other hand, Gideon was a man who was filled with doubts, filled with fears, filled with questions. He was a man who questioned God's will, yet he was also a man who did God's will. However, he was called of God to be a judge in Israel at a time of great trouble in the nation. The Midianites had stripped the harvest fields of their crops. The peoples were impoverished. And lives were endangered. Yet God called and God commissioned Gideon to be the man that would face down the opposition, that would stand up to the enemy attack. And under God, God would see how that the Midianites were defeated. Gideon was to be that man. What we want to look at this morning is the account of this defeat of the Midianites. And part of that account is that how God used a broken instrument, a pitcher, a bottle, a jug, call it what you will, in order to overcome the enemy. God used these broken bottles in the hands of what we will see to be were a broken people to defeat the opposition, to slay the enemy and to bring a great victory and glory to His great name. Because God, as we have seen already throughout this study, uses broken things to fulfill His purpose and to magnify His name. The first thing I want us to notice as we come to Judges chapter 7 are the tactics employed. The tactics employed. Now, if we had taken time to read the earlier part of this chapter, we would see how that Gideon was brought to the point where he would see how the Midianites would be entirely defeated. As with any military attack, there were tactics employed. Tactics that we'll go on to see were successful in the overcoming of the enemy. First thing I want you to notice about these tactics is that they were divine tactics. Look at Judges chapter 7 and the verse 2. Judges chapter 7 and the verse 2. There we read, "And the Lord said unto Gideon." The Lord said unto Gideon. Well, we've got to remember here that this was more than a physical battle. This was a spiritual battle. You see, this was a battle against the people of God. And this was a battle that was forged and spawned in hell. A battle against the forces of hell and evil who were against the people of God. And you see, if this battle was going to be won, then it had to be won according to the plan of God. Let me just stop there for a moment and remind ourselves that we need to realize that every battle in the church of God that we have to face, every battle that we are engaged in, is a spiritual battle. Satan and his forces never stop. Satan and his forces never give up in seeking to attack the people of God and the church of Christ. He will use every tactic, every device in order to seek to overcome God's people. And you see, folks, I think it is time that the Church of Christ woke up to what is going on really in our land, especially right now. This world has never been, will never be, any friend to the Church of God. This world is no friend to Greece. This world has no desire to see the work of God progress or go forward. This world, spurred on and motivated by the forces of hell, want to see the work of God stopped, and so they will use every tactic at their disposal. The Midianites were no friends to the Israelites, and they wanted the entire overthrow and the entire defeat of the people of God. And before they were to see this overcoming, they had to hear what God would have to say, because this was a spiritual battle that they were engaged in. We need to realize today, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. We are still in a spiritual battle. And the problem, I fear, is that today the church has caved into and is in cohorts with the world. And the church is holding hands with the world, and we're acquiescing with the world. And we don't see that the real battle is a spiritual battle. This is not a physical battle we're in. This is not a material battle we're in. This is not a medical battle we're in. This is a spiritual battle. It always has been. And if we're going to win this battle, then we must do it God's way. God's tactics, God's plans were the best plans. Because as we will go on to see, and I'm sure you know this account so well, the tactics that God told Gideon to employ were not the tactics that you or I would have employed. Oh, we like to make our plans, don't we? We want to see things go the way we want them to go. But have you ever thought that God might have a different plan? You remember when Peter and the others fished all night, they didn't catch a fish. Jesus came and told them to cast out into the deep, and they would catch fish, and they did. Peter's plan at that time was to forget fishing for the day and just go home and give up. But when he obeyed God, he realized God had the best plan, and he brought in a draft of fishes. When Goliath saw David coming to meet him for battle, he had a plan to kill David and to feed his carcass to the fowls of the air. But when that stone sank into the forehead of Goliath and he fell dead, Goliath and David found out as well that God had a different plan, and his plan was the best plan. You see, whenever Gideon and his army went into battle, before that victory was going to be won, they had to do it God's way. And that's why we read in verse number 2, the Lord said unto Gideon. This was a spiritual battle. And it had to be won by spiritual means. There were divine tactics here, but I want you to see as well that they were different tactics. At the start of this battle, Gideon had 32,000 in his army. Now, even that number, compared to the vast array of the Midianites, wasn't very much. But what does God tell him? Look at verse 2. The people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. God told Gideon, you've still got too many people. With 32,000, even that was minuscule amongst the hordes of the Midianites. Yet he comes to them and says, you've too many soldiers. You know the story how that little by little, the Lord whittles that 32,000 down to a mere 300. 32,000 soldiers to 300. That's not how we would plan a battle, is it? That's not how we would plan things. God, as we have read in verse number 2, said that he didn't want pride to come into the, the equation. Nobody, naturally speaking, wants to see a decrease. Nobody, naturally speaking, wants to see a reduction in numbers. But you see, the reality is, folks, that sometimes God has to take from us in order to bless us. Those 300 soldiers were wholly, entirely committed and dedicated to the work. And that little band of people, as we will see, were a far greater force to be reckoned with than the 32,000 who really had no interest in the work at all and whose heart wasn't in the work. Gideon now had 300 soldiers, 300 people that he could depend on whose heart was in the work. And folks, I tell you, when you've got a small, dedicated, devoted band of workers, it's a far greater force to be reckoned with than thousands of hangers-on. They were different tactics. They were divine tactics. But I want you to see as well, they were definite tactics. Look at verse 7. The Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you and deliver the Midianites into thine hand. And let all the other people go, every man unto his place. These were definite tactics. God came and said to him, no, that 300, that band of 300 men, I will use to show you a great victory. Let all the others go to their own place, but let me use that 300 group of people. What a promise. What a promise. By the 300. Not by the 32,000. But by the 300, I will save you and deliver the Midianites into thine hand. What a definite plan. Notice that God gave this definite promise to Gideon once he had fully obeyed the Lord. Before God gave this great promise, Gideon had to display great obedience. He had to do what the Lord called him to do. When he was obedient to the Lord, when he was faithful to the Lord then gave him that promise. No doubt, while it's not recorded for us, Gideon possibly wondered, what was God doing? He reducing his army. But you know what? He just trusted God. He just got on with what the Lord told him to do. What a way to go into battle, folks. What a way to face the enemy. With the promise of God ringing in their ears, I'll save, I'll deliver the Midianites into thine hand. You see, folks, to Gideon, that promise of God was worth far more than 32,000 soldiers. That promise that God was going to give the victory was far better to him than all those whose heart were not in the work. That's the tactics employed here. The tactics rather engaged here. I want us to come now and see, secondly, the tools employed. The tools employed. Because we want now to look at the tools that Gideon employed in order to implement this divine plan. The first tool was that of the meditation. Verse 9. Came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. But if I fear to go down, go thou with Purah thy servant down with the host. What's going on here? He's getting alone with God. Before anything happened in this battle, Gideon took time to meditate upon the Lord. What we see from verse 9 onwards, from the next number of verses, is Gideon doing business with God. Getting before God, seeking the face of God, getting a word from God. And you read the rest of those verses, you'll see that he got a vision and a view of what the Lord was going to do. That barley cake tumbling into the host of the Midianites. He got a word from the Lord. Dear believer, as we've already said, this was a spiritual battle. And this spiritual battle was going to be won in the place of prayer before it was won on any battlefield. You see, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of the strongholds of Satan. Why do we meet on a Thursday night for prayer? Why do we gather for prayer? Because prayer is one of the greatest tools in the weaponry of the soldier of Jesus Christ. It might seem insignificant, and I'm sure as the people passing by on a Thursday night see the congregation coming in here wondering, what on earth are they doing? Folks, if we're going to see a victory, we're going to see it won in the place of prayer. I don't need you to tell you that. You know that. You trace the history of our denomination. Times of great blessing always came after times of great prayer. There was the meditation. That was one tool. But I want you to see down in verse 16 now, there was the maneuvering. Another tool. Verse 16, we read that he, that's Gideon, divided the 300 men into three companies. He divided them into three different groups, and each group would be stationed at strategic points, so that the whole company would surround the camp of the Midianites, and that they would be covered and that they would be surrounded. The Midianites had encamped in the valley. And the Israelites, the 300, would be strategically placed on the hill surrounding the valley. And this was a very strategic move, because the Midianites, when they were aroused, they would see the Israelites, and it would seem that they were surrounded. But here's the thing I want you to see. If that group of 300 men, they all have their own place. They all had a part to play. Every man was to surround the camp of the Midianites. And they all had a part and a place in this battle. And dear believer, today, there's an important lesson there. Every one of us have a part to play in the work of God. Every one of us has a place that we must take in the work of God and to see the enemy overcome. You see, for this maneuvering to work, what had to happen? Every single one of those 300 men had to be in their place. There were to be no gaps in the line of defense. There were to be no gaps in the line of attack. And sadly today, in the work of God, there are gaps, because there are Christians not willing to take their stand, not willing to take their place, and so they're out of place and they're out of tune. And today, in the house of God, there are gaps. There are people who should be here worshiping with us. Sadly, their place is empty. Watching online and letting others do the work. I make no apology for saying this. Online worship is not public worship. Is not doing the work of God. And if you're fit and well, you should be in the house of God. I see 70, 80, 90 year old men and women struggling to get to church. with a desire to get to church. And yet those who are healthy, fit and well, no desire. There's gaps. Fear of everything, but no fear of God. What about the empty place in the prayer meeting? Is your seat empty on a Thursday night? Too tired, too busy? Out every other night of the week, but will stay in on a Thursday night? Is your place empty? You need to be here. Let's not be found wanting. Let's not allow our place to be empty anymore. Let's get back to the place we need to be. Because folks, the battle is getting hotter and hotter. You just need to listen to what you see every day that's going on around you. And the enemy is attacking not every day now, it's every hour. In the Church of Jesus Christ, we're silent. We're giving in. And there are gaps. I want you to see another tool here. I want you to see now the munitions, the equipment that were used in this attack. Go back to verse 16 again. And he divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. What's missing? What's missing in this attack? There's not a rifle. There's not a spear. There's not a knife. There are no weapons that would be used normally in a battle. What is there? There's a trumpet. And there's a lamp in a pitcher or a bottle. Now these trumpets, they were not the musical instruments that we would think of. But rather they were trumpets made out of ram's horns that were used to herald an announcement. The pitchers or the bottles, the jugs, they were pots made out of clay, and the lamps put inside the pitchers so that the light would be hidden until the appropriate time. Now to the natural eye, you look at verse 16. 300 didn't seem very many. And then their weapons didn't seem very useful. They seemed to be totally inadequate. Totally useless. These weapons were weak and they seemed as nothing in the face of the opposition. But what was God wanting to show the people? What was God wanting to remind the people? I believe the Lord was wanting to show them that this battle was going to be won by faith, not by fight. These men were to walk into battle by faith, wholly trusting, depending on the Lord, not walking by faith, but walking. Not walking by sight, but rather by faith. You see, sometimes we want to get all our ducks lined up in the row, don't we? We want everything to be in place before we decide to move on. Rather than just going on and seeing God at work. With these horns and pitchers, these torches, these 300 men were taking a step of faith. And what were they doing? Saying, I'm trusting God. I'm trusting God. Have we lost the eye of faith? Has our spiritual eyesight been so dimmed? Have we become overcome with policy and procedure and rules and regulations? We've lost the joy of living by faith and seeing God meet the need. The early church knew what it was to be used of God. You remember the record of Peter and John And the world perceived them to be unlearned and ignorant men, yet they took notice they had been with Jesus. They were men that turned the world upside down. They were unarmed. They were unlearned. They were despised by governments. They lacked any regard by the world. Yet they had power with God because they walked by faith. And they claimed cities and regions by faith, simply going and preaching and proclaiming the gospel of Christ. These 300 men were just going into battle by faith. Seems today we want to impress the world, we want to appeal to the world with things that seem impressive to them. But folks, the chief desire of the child of God is to walk so as to please God and not man. These tools seem so insignificant. But I tell you, God used them to overcome the battle. The tactics engaged, the tools employed. But finally, as we close, I want us now to see the triumph enjoyed. The triumph enjoyed. Because now we want to conclude by looking at the victory. Looking at the victory that the Israelites enjoyed over the Midianites. As we think of this triumph, notice first of all the scheduling of it. This attack, these 300 men standing with their trumpets and their pitchers and their lamps in them. This attack took place at the darkest part of the night. But it also took place at a time when the enemy was most vulnerable. Look at verse 19. So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came on to outside the camp in the beginning of the middle watch, and they had but newly set the watch. They had newly set the watch. They had changed the guard, the Midianites, that is. And the changing of the guard is the most vulnerable time because the transition from one watch to another watch is a time of distraction and least vigilance. What was Gideon doing? Gideon was using the opportunities that God gave to him. He had a small army. He had very few weapons, but he was determined to see the victory by seizing the opportunity. Oh, too often we can complain and be concerned about the smallness of our resources, but are we using the opportunities that God gives us? Gideon grasped those opportunities and he used them and he availed of them. What was he doing? He was busying himself in the work. It didn't seem that he could do much, but he was determined to do something. And you know, I fear today that the church, particularly over recent months, has become lazy, resting on our laurels and all these restrictions, and we say we can't do much, and so we do nothing. Let's take the opportunities and let's prove God through the opportunities that He gives us. There was the scheduling, but there was also the sounding. You look in verse 19, they blew the trumpets. They blew the trumpets. What was that? That was a battle cry. Over in Numbers chapter 10, in the verse 9. The instruction here is given to Moses from the Lord. He says, "And if you go to war in your land against the enemy that oppresseth you, then ye shall blow an alarm with the trumpets, and ye shall be remembered before the Lord your God, and ye shall be saved from your enemies." So by going into battle, by blowing the trumpets, they were sounding, they're in the battle now. This was a battle call. This was a declaration to the enemy. We're engaged in the battle and we're going to battle. Now let's remember, these 300 men looking down on the camp of the Midianites, although it was dark, they would have seen their tents of thousands of soldiers.
for them to blow the trumpet, first of all, to courage. To courage.
Picture the scene. It would have been quiet. And the very first blow of the trumpet was going to create a hustle in the camp. These 300 soldiers were courageous. And they blew the trumpets, they sounded the trumpets, and they were declaring to the enemy, "We are in battle." It took courage. Not only was there the scheduling and the sounding, but I want you to see as well there is the smashing. Verse 19, "And break the pitchers that were in their hands." Verse 20, "And the three companies blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers and held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands." Just picture that scene. The blowing of the trumpets in the stillness of the night, and then all of a sudden the smashing, the breaking of these bottles. What a sound that would have created. A sound that would have resounded again across the whole valley. But in order for that sound to be made, in order for those pitchers to be of use, they had to be broken. Because remember, inside those pitchers there was a light. That light, until those pitchers were broken, was unseen. But once those pitchers, those bottles were broken, the light shone forth. And for the enemy to be unsettled, there had to be this breaking. Now it might have seemed an awful waste, breaking these 300 pots of clay. But that brokenness was all part of the plan of God. All part of the means that God would use in order to overcome the enemy. Before that victory was won, the brokenness had to be experienced. Oh, often for us to know victory in our lives have to be broken. And those things that we think are precious, they have to be broken. Before we can shine brightly for the Lord, there are times we have to be sorely broken by the Lord. And before these pitchers were of use in the battle, they had to be broken. Then there is the shouting at the end of verse 20. "And they cried, 'The sword of the Lord and of Gideon.'" The sword of the Lord. They were in battle not for themselves. They were in battle for the Lord. And then verse 21, there's finally the standing. "And they stood every man in his place round about the camp." They stood in their place. They didn't desert their place of service or duty. They had a place, they had a part, and they stood their ground. Dear believer, today we all have a part in the work of God in this church. We all must stand our ground. These 300 men, only a handful in the light of the vast numbers of the Midianites, yet with courage they stood their ground. And like old Luther, they could say, here I am, I can do no other. Here I stand, I can do no other. Church of Jesus Christ today needs to take our stand. We need to take our stand. They simply stood, they stood firm. Notice what happened. The end of verse 21.
And all the host ran, cried, and fled. Not a shot fired, not a dagger drawn, not a spear thrown. Men faithful to God, dedicated to the work of God, doing what God called them to do, and they stood their ground, and through that the enemy fled. God's enemies were defeated. Look in verse 22. 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host. The Midianites now turn on each other. They don't know what's going on. God has sent confusion into the camp. And may God send confusion into the camp of the enemy and into the camp of the world. They didn't know what they were doing. And what did they do? They just turn on each other. God's enemies were defeated. God's people were delivered. Verse 23, and the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali and out of Asher and out of all Manasseh and pursued after the Midianites. It happened as God said it would happen. What did He say? I will save you and deliver the Midianites into your hands. The victory was secured. And the enemy was overcome. Part of it were these broken bottles. Broken bottles in the hands of a broken people. God used to secure the victory. What did these people do? They simply proved God. And thank God today that the God of Gideon is still our God. That God can use the little things, that little army who were faithful, dedicated, obedient. God used them to overcome the enemy. God can use us today. But let's remain faithful. Let's stand our ground. Let's take our place and let's be found faithful. And through all of this that's going on at the moment, let's prove God. Because God is still able. We might seem that we're broken, only a handful. But God can use the handfuls to secure the victory. Let's bow in prayer.